Salam and good evening to you, worthy friend. Please, please, come closer.
Too close, a little too close.
Welcome to episode 37 of the Disney Brit Podcast for Wednesday, the 15th of March, 2010. Hello, welcome. We're going to start off, as always, with our news and rumours. Juz and Craig are going to join me for that. They're going to give you the very, very final day of my Disney Daily Diary, day 20. Let you know what happened there. 21, came home, wasn't really a huge amount to say. Other than we were very delayed in our flight, nearly 5 hours. But hey-ho, that's what happens. Then our final segment for the show is going to be Around the World in 80 Segments. This time we're moving ourselves over to Frontierland. We're going to be looking at the rides, shows and attractions you can find over there. So there you go, that's the show for episode 37. So without any further ado, let's get on with this edition of the Disney Brit Podcast.
Flexible, simple, valued, secure, honest, and trusted. They are some of the words that people think of when they book their Orlando holiday. And they are exactly the same words that people associate with CompleteOrlando.co.uk. With staff available 7 days a week, there are no better people to use. Contact the Orlando experts on 0800-294-8888. Or visit www.CompleteOrlando.co.uk.
Good morning, sire.
Good morning, Zazu.
Checking in with the morning report.
Fire away.
Here we go with some Disney news then, of course, as always. Joining me is Juz. Hello.
Hi, Adam. Hi, Disney Pod people.
And also Mr. Orlando, Craig.
You nearly got that wrong.
I nearly got that completely wrong, yeah.
You can't call him that on this show.
Can I not? Sorry. The other one. I can't call him that.
That's on the show. It's just Craig.
We have to be nice to Craig because he's poorly, because he's hurt his finger.
I'm suffering with an injury tonight, yeah. But hello, everyone. I hope you're all well.
Craig's got IKEA finger tonight. He'll be fine. Right. Anyway, before we just get any sillier than we've already got. We've been online on conversation for nearly 9 minutes, and I've only just managed to get him to shut up so we can do some recording. Right, let's head into some Disney news then. I'm going to start us off with the new Premier Passport that was announced last Wednesday, which is, if you own a passport or an annual pass for both Disneyland and Walt Disney World, you are going to be able to combine them to get the new Premier Passport. If you own one of the annual passes for either Disneyland or Disney World, you're going to be able to top it up, because this new passport is going to allow you unlimited access to all of the theme parks in the USA that are Disney owned, obviously. Unlimited 365 days access to Magic Kingdom, Epcot, Hollywood Studios, Animal Kingdom, Disneyland and California Adventure. Also includes park hopping privileges, parking at all the theme parks. There's unlimited entry to Disney's Typhoon Lagoon and Blizzard Beach water parks, subscription to pass holders publications, a 1 year subscription to the Disney Family Fun magazine, access to Disney Quest and to ESPN Worldwide of Sports. Also unlimited use of Disney's Oak Trail golf course. There was absolutely no blackout dates for this whatsoever, but the price Well, $700 plus sales tax. The passport went on sale on March the 11th. We haven't had any feedback from Disney as to how well it's going. But is $700 too much, do you think?
Does it include the plane between the two sites?
No.
Could I ask, is sales tax dearer in California or Florida?
I think it might be slightly more expensive in Florida.
So am I worth flying out to California to get it to save money?
I'm not convinced the flight is going to be the equivalent to the rise in tax.
Oh, right.
But, yeah, if you plan on going out to Disneyland anyway, it could be worth picking it up there rather than picking it up in Walt Disney World.
I think, well, it's bizarre because I know loads of people who are my Facebook friends or forum, I mean, they love it. They go to both sides. As I think discussion on ESPN this weekend, he called them bi-coastal, did he?
Yes, he did call them bi-coastal, yeah. But if I actually think about $700, you know, convert that to British, we're like 600 and something pounds, aren't we? For unlimited access any day of the year to any theme park, including your water box, the lot, I don't think $700 is that bad.
Yeah, but for $500, you can get every park in Orlando.
I think it's a lot of money. I think they should... how many people, really, unless you kind of... You know, Len or Lou or Debs or any of these people that if somebody lives in Texas, maybe they can go either way. Are really going to go that often to both of them? You're either going to go to one or the other because you live near enough there or you go over frequently enough. So I really think they should have done it for the same price. Why don't they throw in, you know, Paris and Tokyo and everywhere else?
Now, it's interesting you say that because the annual general meeting that happened this week, one of the questions that was asked was, why have you not done a ticket that is worldwide, that gives you access to all? And apparently they sat down as a board, and in the board meeting they discussed it, and it just, logistically, it just would have been a nightmare. It would never have worked. They just could not find a way for it to have worked. They found a way to do it through the US resorts, but it just was never going to happen within the worldwide resorts, unfortunately. But I think, you know, a passport that we would be able to use at Disneyland Paris and to use at Walt Disney World would be an awesome thing.
Well, how I don't think it's sorry, Joe. I was going to say, I don't think it's logistics. I think it's revenue share. Mm.
Yeah, it could also be that as well. What with, especially Hong Kong being owned by the, or not Hong Kong, sorry, is it Hong Kong or China that's owned by the Oriental Land Company more than it is Walt Disney World. So then there's then that idea of who's going to have what, where's the money going to go. At least with the US parks, they know that it's owned outright by Disney and there won't be an issue with revenue share there.
Well, what they could do is if you've got an annual pass from the parks and you go into another park, you're allowed a 3 or 4 day ticket to that park. And that's not logistics. That's called clever business sense, because what you're doing is going, I'll let them have free entry to my other park, whether it's whoever it's owned by. But the point is they've actually got more revenue coming through the door that they wouldn't have normally had.
That's very true. I wonder whether something like that might come along a little bit later on as another incentive.
Mm-hmm.
Craig, what have you got? Oh, go on, sorry.
I was to say, it's still Juzzy's idea. There's a reason why three of us should be running that company, and we'll find out one day when all our ideas come to fruition. Okay, Give a Day reaches its goal. The Disney promotion for Give a Day, Get a Disney Day has reached its goal of 1 million days?
Yeah. One million volunteers,
which is a phenomenal success for something. It was launched on January the 1st of this year. They launched the program celebrating the spirit of a volunteer service with simple proposition, which we all know was Give a Day, Get a Disney Day. It was a first of its kind program, hoping to inspire families to volunteer in their communities. It reached its goal of the 1 million volunteers in just 10 weeks. And it was only to cover United States, Canada and Puerto Rico as well. Upon completing their volunteer service for a participating organization, each of those million people receives one day admission pass to Walt Disney World Resort or any Disneyland Resort theme park. Although the program has ended, free Disney theme parks won't be provided to future signups. Those that still are interested can volunteer and search for opportunities through the Hands-On Network, which is http://hands-onnetwork.org. And I had looked on there before, actually, and there is absolutely loads of things on there that you can do with, you know, your kids from 12-year-old upwards, you know, for a few hours a day to a whole day's work. So there's lots of good things for you to do to make you feel better about yourself, to know you're helping others.
Excellent. But can you believe that they've managed to fill a million positions in 10 weeks? That's just astounding. And it makes you wonder now, what happens to the Muppets Parade that's currently going on in the middle of the park? What happens with all of those bits and pieces? The whole theme this year was this Give a Day, Get a Disney Day, and it's been completed within 10 weeks.
Well, you've got a population of, yeah, say it's alone, it's 300 million. So, a million, you know, it doesn't take much to do. Or I could say, I think it's absolutely amazing. I think it's brilliant. It's been done in 10 days.
10 weeks. 10 days would be amazing.
And I think the government should look at it and think, wow, you know, perhaps they could help with Disney and invest into that sort of thing that people are giving to them. And it's all karma, isn't it? I think it's absolutely amazing.
Completely. I completely agree with you.
Go Disney.
Go Disney indeed. And going Disney over to Disneyland to let you know about a new D23 event that's coming. It's going to be replacing the D23 Expo for this year. There was talk that the Expo would be returning in 2010, but the Expo will now return August the 19th to the 21st, 2011. We'll be coming to the Anaheim Convention Center again. But in 2010, there is a new event entitled Destination D. It's a brand new two-day event exclusively for D23 members, which is going to be highlighting all the fascinating Disney history. Loads and loads of stuff that's going to be going on there. Destination D is going to be themed Disneyland 55. It's going to be held September the 24th and the 25th. Just to let you know a little bit more about things that's going to be happening over there, there's going to be several different guest speakers. There's going to be different exhibits. So Disneyland the Way We Were, the chief archivist Dave Smith is going to be bringing highlights of Disneyland history. There's Disneyland Undiscovered, and this is what I'd be really interested in seeing. It's an exploration of never built projects and attractions developed for Disneyland. There's the 23 on 55, which is looking at the archive celebrating the Disneyland's 55th wedding anniversary?
Got that in your mind
for
last week.
Oh, what's going on? 55th anniversary. And really interesting one, Weird Disney, which is a showcase for some of the quirky little-known facts, places, people, and ideas that even the most avid fan might not know, apparently. Tickets are going to go on sale fairly soon. I forget what date it is off the top of my head. But also tickets for the D23 Expo in 2011, they are going to be going on sale early this summer. So basically a year ahead, they're going to be putting these tickets on sale. It's a day less than it was last year, but it's still, I think, going to be an excellent opportunity. And they did say that the D23 was going to be primarily in California for the first 4 years. So I wonder whether the 2011 Expo will be the last one before maybe it moves over to Florida.
I'll be there in Lou's laptop.
Yes, I'll be there in the box.
In the box. Sadly.
That was good fun last time.
I enjoyed it. That was a great thing about it, was the fact that he shared it with us and it looked brilliant. And yes, I'm jealous. I'd love to go.
I certainly would. But Craig, the next Expo, you'd be out in America for the next Expo. Are you at all tempted to take that flight over to Anaheim?
No. Pretty much. No, it's about 6 hour flight over there.
Yeah, something like that, 5 hour flight.
No, I wouldn't go for that. I mean, I'd go if it was in Florida, definitely. But no, if I was going to take a flight anywhere and I was in Florida, I'd probably want to go to Las Vegas or somewhere like that. But not fly to California to go to an Expo. No, I wouldn't do that.
Okay, interesting.
I told you.
2011, that sort of time is the time when I'd be thinking about going back out to Orlando again. And it'd just be so tempted to see just how much those flights were, just to head over there and just go and join in and not be in the box.
I'll let you tell Zoe that you're going all the way to California to go to an Expo and she's not going to Rodeo Drive. Have fun with that.
You could just go there instead.
We may need to have a meeting about how we may approach this subject. Yes. Anyway, if you're listening, darling, I wouldn't even dream of going out to California without you.
Me and Craig will club the money together just to send you out.
Exactly. Can we not just leave your wife and my wife at your house, Craig, for a few days?
They've got that's a plan.
There you go. And we'll leave them with a car and we can just go off to the Expo.
Yeah, we could do that. And then we'll fly Juzzy over as well. So all the three amigos.
Have you thought that they might want to go themselves? You horrible, horrible people.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. They could come with us. They could man the Disney Brit stall while we go off to all of the different things. Excellent. I didn't even think of that. Right. Anyway, let's move on then. Juz, something about annual pass discounts?
No.
Oh, okay.
It just says super annual pass discounts at Walt Disney World at the moment. If you visit Walt Disney World before May and you're an annual pass holder, you can get 10% off at most stores in the park. Little speech marks around most. If you have a premium pass, you receive 20% at most stores at the park. This offer is valid until sometime in May. There's no end date been announced. Probably the exact same day that Craig goes out there with his annual pass to probably stop it. But it's this kind of thing, you know, if you work out really quickly on paper, if you're going down there, you can recoup the cost of your annual pass very quickly with the sales you're going to make within the park. So I think if somebody lives in the States and going down there, this is, you know, and going for more than what, 7 days, this is where you can really make a killing on your actual ticket. I'm not sure, I didn't manage to look into the most stores, but I always find I go in there and they go, no, it's not here, sorry.
It's because it's a fairly new thing. I think it's probably going to be, I think it's fairly safe to say, any store that's Disney owned within the parks, I would think you'll be able to get the discount on.
You think?
Well, yes, because that's
not
what they usually
good
do.
Enough for our listeners.
That's not good enough, no. But it's interesting, this, because it's been happening in California for quite a while now that you've been able to get the discount. Go over to Disneyland Paris, you can get discount in all of those Disney-operated stores. And it's strange that it's not happened in Walt Disney World for so long. Is this another test period? I wonder whether it's going to be something they're going to keep going.
It's because they need the money.
It could be because they need the money. Maybe it's also to encourage people with these premier passes. It could be a combination of things.
Mm-hmm.
But saying they need the money, let's head into Magic Kingdom to find out a place where they're helping people save a little bit of money. Craig, what you got?
Oh, he's very good. I like this, Adam. Yeah, Magic Kingdom Pirates League. There have been a price change. The Pirates League offers two packages to choose from $29.95 plus tax. The First Mate or Empress. Originally, this package was priced at around $50, with a premium package charged at $129. So all of the packages include, you get quite a lot for your money, really. You get a choice of facial effect, five to choose from. You get a reversible bandana, earring and eye patch, sword and sheath, temporary tattoo, get some ink on you, make you look... Unique pirate coin necklace.
More of a Cornish person.
Yeah, Jethro's joined the podcast.
Oh, you've personalized... got a magic combine harvest or whatever it is.
Oh, shut up now. Pirate oath.
Have you got a light, boy? Anyway.
Official pirate name. I don't know what yours would be, Adam. I'm Mr. Unfunnyus.
Removable... Latin pirate.
Yeah, exactly. Removable teeth star. Now, the star's important. We'll come back to that. Participation in the daily Adventureland Pirate Parade. The star means the Empress package does not come with removable teeth, but does come with some vibrant and bold makeup, plus nail polish and a face gem. Costumes, headwear, and imaging sold separately and available at the location. So, you know, it was expensive. I think it's now... you know, doable for your little prince and princess to become a pirate or an empress. Sounds like a good deal to me.
And if we go back to the last episode when we talked about the Pirate League, and actually I think just you said that it's far too expensive, they brought it down to $30, you'd be happy to go and do that.
Just is right.
Oh, I know. It's just listen to him. But it's interesting, and I like the fact that now we've got this costume, headwear, and imaging. So photos and everything sold completely separately, so you can choose on those. But there's this new daily Adventureland Pirate Parade, which would be interesting. I would guess it would be parading whoever's taken part outside somewhere like Pirates of the Caribbean. But it's, and again, another nice little added extra for children to take part in, and adults, of course. Who's going as a pirate when the next go out there?
Jazz. He loves pirates.
I'm going to walk around like a pirate.
Craig's going to go as a Cornish
pirate. Just some DVDs and stuff like that. Is that what you mean?
Craig?
Yes?
If you're going to be a Cornish pirate, does that mean you're part of Pirates of the Penzance?
Yeah, but no, Pirates of the Pasties.
I was going to say, it sounds more like a Cornish pasty.
A pasty pirate.
A pasty pasty pirate, that's me.
Oh, look at him, alliteration ahoy. Right, Juz, let's move on quickly.
I want to talk about the hit and run that happened on Sunday.
Yes, this hit and run was...
Actually, I shouldn't laugh. That's not a funny way of doing it, Juz.
Yeah, a Walt Disney World employee broke his leg on Sunday afternoon after he was struck by an evil guest, or a nice guest, driving a car in Tomorrowland Speedway at Magic Kingdom. The unidentified employee was airlifted to Orlando Regional Medical Center in a stable condition. It happened just before 1 o'clock, and Disney temporarily closed the attraction to make sure they took pictures of the crime scene, look at the Gatsco cameras, etc. The gas-powered cars used in Tomorrow's Land have top speeds of 7 miles per hour. These are a bit like this, because I put a comment on Facebook, and a lot of people go, I work there, there's no way you can do this, he'll be fine. And it's come out, he's broken his leg, and I thought, ooh, nasty. But on the flip side of it, they are heavy cars.
They are very heavy cars.
They're only going 7 miles an hour, but they are heavy cars.
Can I point out, whose phone is that? Can I point out, you couldn't do a hit and run either? because no, because it's a round track. So by the time you ran, you'd eventually get back to the station for them to go, excuse me, mate, could you just get out of the car,
No, because at some stages you're out of view. So you could have hit him, made a quick go round, and then hopped out.
Yeah, because if they say it's the one in the red car, there's quite a few of them to
And also, I think you'll find that the rule state, you can't bump the car in front. Doesn't say anything about bumping cast members.
You'd feel terrible, though, as a guest.
You would feel terrible as a guest. In all seriousness, you know, we do hope that this cast member is okay and will recover. But you would feel terrible, wouldn't you?
Or you'd sue him for ruining your holiday.
Yes.
In the way of your ride.
Okay, I imagine it's at the station because they stand. What happens is... And I thought this when I've gone down myself. Sometimes they stand on the track at the station and the cars come into each other. And I've often thought, I'm surprised no one's ever got in between the car when it jolts up against it. So they don't stand on the platform, it's like a train platform, do they? Actually, no. Stand down right next to the track where they give you the ticket and stuff. And it's always seemed a bit dicey. When a car comes up behind and you nudge it, it nudges all the cars down in a domino effect, doesn't it?
It does, indeed. And do you know what? Having heard some of the lawsuits and things that have gone on recently, it wouldn't put me past somebody to say, I'm going to sue Disney because by running over this cast member, it made me feel really bad for the rest of my holiday and ruined my holiday.
I bet you.
Yeah. They're still bumpers as well. They've only got to get themselves caught, haven't they?
Yeah.
Ouch. So, but say about they can't identify the cast member. Sure, it's the guy with his leg in plaster.
I just thought so.
Quite easy, really.
I don't think he's going to be back to work just yet.
Oh, okay. If he does, you know who it is.
I don't know whether it's the media at the moment, because of, you know, what happened last year and the sad death, is the fact that whatever's happening at Disney at the moment, whether it's this or some of the things that someone was arrested the other day over child pictures again, all the media is hounding right on top of it.
Yeah, it just seems
to be. It's almost like it's just constant Disney hitting all the time and sort of slagging off a bit. And I think this is going to continue because it seems to have built up momentum now. No matter what happens at Disney, you can guarantee it's going to hit not the Disney press, but the big media presses as well.
Yeah, definitely. And on a serious note, just to finish off with, I do hope the cast member is okay. I do hope he's going to get racing stripes up the side of his cast as well. Right, let's move over to the Noodle Station, just to let you know that it is open for dinner once again, currently open between 5 p.m. and 9 p.m. The restaurant is only open seasonally, so it may close again, but it's fairly likely or expected to remain open during the busy spring break and Easter period. So get your noodles from over there. Some great food from the Noodle Station. In my opinion, underrated and not open enough, but Noodle Station is currently open, so go over and enjoy those. Right, let's head over to
I'm sick of this. Either open it and keep it open or close it and put something else there. This is one of the most open and closed places that we are constantly talking about. It just does me head in. I don't understand.
Such a massive area, seating area, doesn't it? And when we had because we had the Disney Brit meet there, and we were just sort of sat on these tables, and there was just so much empty space everywhere else. It was untrue. Yeah, anyway. moving on then. Let's move on to Epcot.
Okay, well, you've given me the best bit of news to do for a podcast. It's got two photographs in it.
Just so you can see what they look like.
Oh, okay, right, for everyone else. So you can now have to do something clever with the podcast feed and show them on the screen. Epcot, monorail to get Tron Legacy overlay. Now, these pictures, I've got two pictures on my screen that Adam has very kindly sent me. These monorails look awesome. So monorail trains are going to be transformed. They will be visible on the Epcot monorail as early as this month. And if you look close, you'll notice the design of the futuristic motorcycle-like vehicles from the upcoming film Tron Legacy. Also includes walls of trailing coloured lights. Tron Legacy is a 3D high-tech adventure set in the digital world that's unlike anything ever captured on the big screen. The film is scheduled to hit theatres on December the 17th. Now, there's one train... and I kind of like the second one best. I don't know what you guys think, but there's one train which is kind of, they're both kind of painted a really cool teal metallic blue. But one of them has got really smart kind of orange sun effect going all the way down it. The other one is just a lighter colour blue with a kind of airbrush motorcycle on the front of it. But they look really, really awesome.
They do look truly awesome. They do look they're going to be amazing when they go around. Apparently, monorail... Coral, I think it is, has already had the overlay on one of the pilot carriages. So, fingers crossed, it's not going to be long until we see some of these starting to appear.
They are gorgeous.
I wonder, they're not going to stay, unfortunately, which is a shame because it'll only be... Well, I suppose it depends on how popular Tron is.
You could get rid of just the Tron logo on the side. The colours are brilliant. The sort of the sunset orange red and the blue. I think the colours are amazing on them. If you can get excited over colours.
What colour would you call them though? Well, you know, blue. Now they all have different ones. We got monorail blue, can't have that.
Monorail sunset.
Monorail metallic. Sunset. Yeah. And monorail, you know, if he's got metallic.
It's the same one, it's just the opposite side, isn't it?
Do you know if he's got metallic paint? Does that mean he has to pay an extra £300?
350 plus VAT.
But they do look great. They do look fantastic. These light cycles on the side of them, and obviously the Tron logo on there as well. Be good to see those around for a little while, if possible. Right, shall we head into Epcot then? As we've gone on the, we've got on that transportation from the Magic Kingdom to Epcot. Let's head in the park.
Is it Segway Adam today?
Oh, it is. Yeah, look at me.
Over to the Cantina del San Angel. Do you like that?
Well, except for it's not in the French pavilion. It's lovely.
That was my Mexican.
Oh, sorry.
Which is very near France. Just over the Himalayas. And you're there. Probably should get out more.
Yeah, I would, yeah. That would be good. Please do.
Just, there's another construction wall at Epcot. This time it's in the Mexico pavilion along the World Showcase Lagoon Waterfall. The popular Cantina de San Angel restaurant is expanding. When the wall comes down, there'll be 400 seats. And it's air-conditioned for lunch and for dinner and for viewing. I don't know what you guys think. I think this is absolutely one of the best places for actually watching illuminations anyway. Table service restaurant will occupy half the space. Here that the tall frozen margaritas will stay on the menu. Why have you put that down, Adam? Is it just something you panicked over, the fact that you're worried that they'll disappear off the menu?
No, because there was talk that they were disappearing.
But they have a margarita stand right behind you.
Yes, but, you know, you want to be able to sit down and enjoy a table, wouldn't you?
You can't be bothered walking.
Yeah, basically, it's for the lazy people. But what's the betting that the sit-down restaurant is at the point where you can sit and watch Illuminations?
I don't know. I think it'd be like Rose and Crown, where you've got your sit-down restaurant, and if you've actually got a booking there, you'd be allowed to go onto the little pier bit as a private viewing. It makes it very sellable.
Not completely. Completely, totally and utterly. And it'd be nice that it'll be open in time for Epcot's Food and Wine Festival as well, which would be good.
And of course, it does great food down there.
It does, and Craig
can go. I love the food.
Craig,
I love it there. Trip. Definitely. Well, I always stop there because the kids love the quesadillas. I love it. I love the Mexico Pavilion. So, yeah, I think research trip, definitely.
Definitely. Good stuff. Okay, let's head over to do Hollywood Studios. We're going to give you a bit of a refurb update about the studio backlot. It closed a little while back. Well, actually, 15th of February it closed, along with the catering company there. And they were going to close off the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids movie set, which they haven't done in the end. They've actually kept that open and they're sort of refurbing it as they go. The rumours of the long rehab were that the backlot tour was going for good. We would never see it again. But unfortunately, it's still here. The main part of the refurbishment looks like it's going to be Catastrophe Canyon is being given a big makeover. The tanker truck has been completely removed from the site. It's now being restored in the central shops. And if you go on the Backstage Magic tour, you actually get to go into central shops and you get to see all of the stuff they're currently working on. So if you're going on the Backstage Magic tour any time in the next week or a couple of weeks, you may indeed see the tanker truck being refurbed inside central shops. Some of the rock work has also been stripped right back. They're completely rebuilding that. They're going from the sort of steel structure and putting all that rock work back on again. And a Catastrophe Canyon should look amazing, ready for the reopening on the 28th of March.
Yeah, love Catastrophe Canyon. It's cool.
It is cool, but has Backlot Tour not had its day now? Is it not time that, that space should be taken up by something else?
No, I like it.
Craig?
No, I don't really care for it, to be honest. I think if you haven't done it, I think you have to go and see it the once. I think it's pretty good to see it, but it's not a repeatable ride in my or an attraction in my view. I think you've done it once, and I'm going to go and see, you know, floods of water and a fire and a. I've done it once.
I think it's back. Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, there is definitely a thrill for the first time, and it's pretty amazing to see it the first time, but there is, to me, there's no repeat visit needed.
I think we're going to need to go back to that question that we always have to ask ourselves, which is, if you had never been before, was it worth it? Personally, you know, it's a shadow of its former self when it was originally. We had all of the backstage magic and all that sort of stuff attached to it. It was amazing. And I think because I remember that so well, now it's really lost a lot of what it was. But if you are somebody who doesn't go very regularly or has never been before, I think it's still well worth going just for that Catastrophe Canyon bit.
I like it. Sorry.
And so the most recent update they had before this was the Playhouse from Hannah Montana the movie.
Still
which was all right, but yeah, we're not going to change your mind, I know that much. But I just wanted to give you an update on what was going on with the studio backlot, and it looks like, nope, it's not going anywhere just yet. Right, head over to Animal Kingdom.
You see, when I first read this, I thought, oh, that's great, they've named it after me, because it says here, baby gorilla born at AK, given name Craig. Which I thought, odd name for a baby gorilla, but you know, I've been the other one. I've been Mr. Orlando. You know, give me any name you like. Not even just star me out and just give me star, star, star. If you want to do that as a name, I don't mind. The baby gorilla has been born. The baby gorilla born on February the 19th. I think we did mention this actually to Mother Kashata, has been confirmed to be a female.
Careful you say that, haven't you?
Yes, and has been named Lily in honour of the late Alicia Lily, PhD, who was the senior scientist and vice president for the Diane Fossey Gorilla Fund International. The mother, Cassetta, and baby are doing very well.
Oh, Cassetta Craig. That's lovely.
Yeah.
Anyway, right, let's move on before that gets any worse.
Exactly. Yes.
What else we got for Animal Kingdom?
Not a zoo.
But it is a zoo.
No, it's not a zoo.
It's not a zoo, but it is a zoo, purely for the fact of the next piece of news.
Not a zoo is a zoo.
Yes.
I like that. Not a zoo is a zoo. Disney Animal Kingdom has received its new Association of Zoos and Aquariums accreditation. As part of the programme, any member is required to reapply every 5 years and must go through the entire accreditation process each time. And they've done it. So if they say it's not a zoo, you can probably sue them.
But do you think they put in the application that it's not a zoo? Because they'd have gone, no, Connor, then what are you doing? What are you playing?
I just like not a zoo.
I thought it was great. I thought it was very clever, a little catchy thing. But it was always obviously a zoo. It was just more than a zoo. But they've got the accreditation, which means they can carry on being zoo-like. So well done, Disney, for another 5 years. Roll on 2015.
Great. What does that mean? They can grow more gorillas?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And rhinos and giraffes.
Plus, it could be an Adam and a Jazz there as well as a Craig.
You really should read the news better, shouldn't
I'll
you?
I'll just cut him off there. Right. Goodbye, Craig. Right, heading over to Disneyland Paris then. Got a few bits of news for Disneyland Paris for you. Starting off with the New Generation Festival. It's fastly approaching 2nd of April. And that means, of course, with a new festival approaching in a couple of months' time, there's new merchandise, which is already appearing in stores with this newest theme. The Disneyland Paris logo, if you've been to Disneyland Paris, you'll see it. What they've been doing is they've taken the logo itself and changed the letters of different Disney characters. So your D was in the shape, was a Mickey Mouse, etc. And they've done that now with New Generation characters. So one of the letters, I think the N is now Buzz Lightyear, and Sully is another letter. And it looks fantastic. I love them. They're brilliant. They've taken that logo and they've begun to put that on all sorts of different bits of merchandise. There's things such as T-shirts, bags, soft toys, notepads, mugs, placemats, you name it, there is next generation stuff for it. But one of the cool soft toy things is, have you guys seen the Mater short where he goes to Tokyo and does Tokyo Mater?
No.
Is that where he does the drifting?
Yeah, he does the drifting, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's one point where he drifts to a building and he drifts out the other side, and as he comes out, you can see in and you can see a monster truck, Sully, and another vehicle for Mike Wazowski as well. And they've released these soft toys of those two, which is cool. So if I'm out there and they've got any left, I want to pick up a Sully one, a Sully monster truck. That would be cool. But New Generation Festival merchandise is now available, even though the event doesn't start until 2nd of April.
You got to hand it to them. Disney are the kings of merchandise and reselling and rebranding.
Oh, completely.
Awesome. Go capitalism.
Is that going to be our new logo?
Why not? Well, I've got some news that's happening in Disneyland Park as well. Mickey's magical party has ended. The celebration ended with a bang as the St. David's Day celebration rounded off the year. Since then, the large symbol has been removed from the front of the castle, and this is pretty good news because for the first time in many years, the castle looks like it did on the opening day, but it probably won't stay like that for long because they'll probably change it for the New Generation Festival.
Nope, it's staying blank.
Is it really?
Yes.
Wow. Well, that's pretty good news. The three-day, just before we talk about that, because that's pretty good news, the three-day St. David's Festival saw the return of the Sword in the Stone ceremony, but this has again disappeared. Now, that'd be cool if that stayed as well.
Mm.
So that's pretty good news, Adam. Where did you find that out? Because it's not in my news here.
They talked about... yes, I'm not writing it down, sorry. They did say that they were going to be keeping the castle completely clear. It was just going to be a plain, normal castle, and I think it's great that... I love the fact that they do the castles over, except for the pink castle cake, which was still the biggest mistake, but the fact that every now and again we have to have a castle looking as it was when it originally opened, and I'm really pleased to see that they finally decided after all these years of putting something on that castle that it's going back to just as it was when it opened on opening day.
And it does say in the news, Craig, I really wish you'd read this beforehand.
You've just read it. Which is when you went, oh, really?
Adam puts all this hard work in, and you just ruin it.
Oh, okay. No, it said it's expected to stay this way for New Generation Festival.
Which means stay that way, which means...
Okay, all right, I'll get my coat.
Can I just point
what
out
that
we just... I might say, can I point out we've just beaten the lawyer? That's good on my Facebook status, right? And also the Sword and the Stone ceremony that came back. I really miss that, even though the ones in Walt Disney World, it was just always a fantastic little thing. Nothing spectacular, but just a really nice little show, and I sort of wish they'd keep it.
Yeah, it's okay.
Oh, all right. He likes Catastrophe Canyon, but didn't like Sword and the Stone ceremony.
He's odd.
Yeah, very strange.
He says, missing the text. Sir, my lord, where did it say he murdered him?
Before you two start a cyber fight, can we get on to Walt Disney Studios?
Yeah, get on with Toy Soldiers. Go on.
Toy what?
Toy Story. Toy Story Soldiers.
What is that far wrong?
Just let you know that the Toy Story Soldiers parachutes have arrived on site now at Walt Disney Studios.
How did they get there?
They parachuted in.
Good man.
Hey. The parachute vehicles for the new attraction have been spotted in the construction area now, and they currently have no colour or decoration on them, which we said the pole didn't either. It looks like this will be all done on site. So, yeah, it's coming along. It really is. It's getting there. I think the problem is with the parachute ride is the fact that that's the most visible at the moment because it's the tallest bit there. So it's nice to see the construction's coming along.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see when that's all decorated and they're up, and we begin to see videos of them actually testing out the operation of it all as well. And it's getting there gradually. We mentioned on the last show that the RC Racer is coming on really well. And, you know, this place is starting to look really good and roll on the summer when it finally opens up.
I still can't take that name seriously. It just sounds like a really fed up, annoyed really? Racer.
Yeah, I think it probably is. But
there we go. Tomorrowland, aren't we?
Oh, look at him. He's quick. It took me a while then. I had to take a minute.
Edit the pause.
Okay, so just one last piece of Disney news. This is specifically for our US listeners. Princess and the Frog is on its way out. It's going to be coming out tomorrow because we're recording this on a Monday, but by the time you hear this, it will already be out. If you've not bought it on DVD or Blu-ray yet, don't until you visit www.princessandthefrogcoupon.com. There you can download a coupon that will give you $10 off either the Blu-ray or DVD release. Disney said there are only a limited number of these coupons. When I checked this evening, there are still some left. But you go over there, download your voucher, print it off, take it to the store, and you can get $10 off the brand new copy of Princess and the Frog. There we go. That is all of the news. We are done. We are out of here.
Woohoo!
Attraction Tickets Direct is the UK's number one ticket provider for Disney, Universal, and the worlds of Discovery Parks. They offer unbeatable prices and expert advice on all the major tickets and attractions in Orlando, California, and Paris. The service Attraction Tickets Direct provides is second to none. Lines are open 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 7 days a week. Customers receive real tickets, not vouchers, within 7 days. And there are no hidden extras, such as credit card fees or postage surcharges. Now that's what you call great service. Log on to www.attractionticketsdirect.com or call free on 0800-975-0002.
So day 20 then of being out here in Orlando, and we headed outside of the Walt Disney Parks today. We went off to Busch Gardens in Tampa, a park that I have not experienced before. It's the first time ever going out to Busch Gardens. So we left here around about 9:30. Would take about an hour to get down to Tampa, so we took that drive down and arrived, and I was amazed at the lack of cars in the car park. Seriously, it was so unbelievably quiet, I wouldn't believe that it was seriously the summer. We headed in, we went right round to the Egypt section first, went and rode the first roller coaster of the day. No wait whatsoever, absolutely none. The only wait we had was the fact they had one ride vehicle on, which meant we had to wait for that to come round before we could get on it again. But it seriously was that quiet. What's my impression of Busch Gardens? It's an interesting park. I liked it. I was pleasantly surprised. It's not Disney. It's actually part of the SeaWorld Corporation, apart from Anheuser-Busch. And, you know, some of the theming was interesting. Some of the theme was excellent. Some of it not quite so. In the Edge of Africa section, there was a couple of huts that were supposed to be African-themed. And to me, they weren't authentically African. They were more sort of theme park African, I suppose, the sort of things you would maybe see in a pantomime stage set, which was a little bit disappointing. But as we headed around the park, we actually saw the theming got better and better. I would put Busch Gardens in the terms of theming in the same sort of category as you would maybe get Alton Towers in the UK. But ride-wise, they have some excellent roller coasters, some of the biggest roller coasters that are in Florida. I wouldn't say they are wow coasters like some of the ones you get in places like Universal Studios, but they're still excellent coasters. We did all but one, Shakira. I must admit, I did chicken out of Shakira. I couldn't do it. It's two 90-degree, so many 100-foot drops, and I just couldn't do it. I chickened out. I couldn't do it at all. But we did do all of the others. We did do many of the other rides. We took my little boy, bless him, on his first ever log flume that he absolutely loved. The park, although it was very quiet, and we arrived probably about 10:30, we left around about 4:30, having thought we'd had a thoroughly excellent day. Hadn't done all of the attractions or all of the shows, but we certainly felt we'd done enough of them and done enough of that, and obviously makes a really good at least one full day park, maybe even more than that. So if you've not been out to Busch Gardens, you do have a spare day, and you do fancy going out there, it is worth going out and experiencing the park out there. We came back, obviously, to Orlando, to our apartment here, and we decided that we would go out and do some shopping. Now, those of you who may not think about going shopping outside of Walt Disney World, really do thoroughly encourage you to go out. We went out to the Florida Mall. When we first arrived, we didn't think it was that big, so we actually got inside and realised just what there was there. The Abercrombie & Fitch store, we spent quite a bit of time in there. Went over to Macy's. We went to the M&M's World. You would not believe how much M&M merchandise, I don't mean the wrapper, I mean the chocolates, how much of that merchandise you can find in one store. Not just the chocolates, but clothing, etc., things like that that you can see. Also, an excellent food court there with a massive choice, and I went to a place called Five Guys, which I think is a sort of local, not local company, but it's not as well known, and had, I think, one of the best burgers I've ever had in Orlando. Burger and fries there was just over $5, and I can honestly say I think it's one of the best $5 I've spent since being here. Florida Mall is a really good place to go up to. You sort of go up the I-4, continue up past SeaWorld, and it's a little bit, I think it's about Junction 74A off of the I-4. But do go up there. I know this edition of the Audio Diary hasn't been Disney specifically, but I just wanted to let you know a little bit more about the things that we've done outside of Disney as well, because I know there's a lot of people who listen to this podcast who don't just come to Orlando just for Disney. They do like to experience the other things as well. There you go. That is this edition of the Audio Diary, Busch Gardens and the Florida Mall. Tomorrow, we're getting up nice and early. We are heading off to Hollywood Studios for the day. So I'll report back to you after we've been there.
Sorry for the hold-up, folks. There seems to be a slow-moving train up ahead, so we got to sit here for a spell. You just remain seated, and we'll be right with you.
We are going to continue into the world of Walt Disney with Around the World in 80 Segments. And we've left Main Street, we've done that, we've been in Adventureland, and we're moving into our third land of the Magic Kingdom, which is Frontierland. And we're going to be looking specifically today at the rides, shows, parades, and attractions that you'll find within this particular land. And we're going to go through, as always, we're going to go through each attraction, who it's designed for, our score out of 5, and give you some information about Fast Passes, disabled access, and any other information that we've got with regards to each of those different bits and pieces. So we'll just very, very quickly touch on the first one, which is the Walt Disney World Railroad. We talked about it in depth on the Main Street section of the show. But is there anything interesting really to say about this? I know one of the things is the fact that it's quite high up, and it's interesting how it's incorporated into Splash Mountain. But have you guys got anything else you really want to add to the railroad for Frontierland?
I mean, apart from the fact that it's high up?
Yeah.
I just think you get a great view inside Splash Mountain. Always go on it because you get a great view of the end scene of Splash Mountain.
You do indeed. You do get the paddle steamer, don't you, right at the end,
yep,
that you can see.
Actually, you've ruined it now. I was just saying the end scene. You've ruined the end scene. Well,
I will refer you gentlemen to the answer I gave some podcasts ago because I can't remember what I said. So I don't want to contradict myself. People say, so... I mean, that's about the only thing, isn't it? Splash Mountain you can add here. So let's move on to Splash Mountain.
Yeah, we're going to move on to Splash Mountain, exactly that. So Splash Mountain, basically the old-style log flume ride given in a Disney twist, based upon the characters from Songs of the South, personally for me, one of the great attractions of the Magic Kingdom. Juz, tell us, who's it designed for primarily, do you reckon?
Me.
Just for you.
Kieran. Yeah.
Do you know what? The first time I went on, just to sort of reminisce a bit here, so, you know, squirrely screen, etc. The first time I went on this, I didn't enjoy it at all, really, because I was more panicking about the drop at the end, which you see from the outside. So it's one of those rides you need to do several times to appreciate it all, once you've gotten over the fear of the fact that the drop is there. I think it's, well, I was going to say for everyone. Everyone who can is above 40 inches.
Yeah.
It will find this amazing. One of the best rides it is, symbolises the whole of Disney. You know, for me, it's 5 stars, and it's just epitomises Disney. It's awesome.
If we're reminiscing, I think that the first time I ever went to Walt Disney World, I saw it, and I wouldn't go on it because of that very first drop. And I think that's a really important point to make.
You were 33 at that stage, wasn't
you? I was, yeah. There's a really important point to make in the fact that that drop that you see is the worst drop out of the entire attraction.
And it's not that bad.
And it's not that bad. No, it looks a lot worse than it actually is.
Yeah, definitely.
And Disney were very clever in the way that they designed the attraction. They purposely put that drop out the front because if people saw that and knew they couldn't cope with it, then they wouldn't queue up and it wouldn't waste any queuing time. But I completely agree. It's anyone over 40 inches, which for those of you who do centimetres, that's 102 centimetres. There is Fast Pass. You must be able to transfer from a wheelchair to ride this attraction. You can use a standby line or obtain a fast pass to get onto Splash Mountain. Has anybody else got any sort of tips or bits and pieces? Craig, I know you've not given it. How many stars would you give this?
I haven't said anything about this yet. I mean, I really like Splash Mountain. I think the only thing that slightly negative for people who aren't perhaps as geeky as us three is that it is quite a long attraction. And, you know, I really enjoy that because there's detail every time for to see and different things that I look out for. I mean, this is Kieran's probably favourite ride in all of Walt Disney World. He absolutely adores it. And I think half the part of that is getting wet at the end of it. But no, I really do enjoy it. I like it. I think it's got a really cool little catchy song. You know, what goes up must surely come down. You always kind of have that buzzing around in your head. The drop isn't too scary, although I do like the story about Michael Eisner getting soaked when he test rode it, which I think is very funny. And I always think of that, actually.
I think we need to share that, actually, because I don't know whether everybody knows that story.
Go on, Adam, you tell it better than I do.
Okay, well, basically, Michael Eisner was testing out Splash Mountain when it was first built, and the Imagineers had been testing out the log flumes so that it didn't create too much splash, and they'd been doing all this work, and they'd put the logs in, and they tested them all out without anybody in it, and Michael Eisner came along and said, right, I want to test Splash Mountain. And they went, no, hang on, well, you just can't try it yet, it's not quite ready. And they said, no, give it a go. You know, he said, I want to give it a go, I want to try it. And the Imagineers went, I don't think this is necessarily a great idea, but if you really want to give it a go, then fine. So Michael Eisner got in, I think, with his son at the time. And they rode all the way around the attraction, and the drops weren't too bad. And he got to the final drop, which, of course, is reasonably steep, just bring up quite a lot of splash. But the way the Imagineers had designed the front of the boats, rather than the boat pushing the water away, it pushed the water up, over, and down on top of the boat. So Michael Eisner got absolutely drenched when he rode the attraction, one of the very first times it happens. But I think there's about 5 or 6 different drops within that. Craig does enjoy it, I can vouch for that, because I sat with on it with him in the summer, and he screamed like a girl. But I would give it 5 stars, so I think it's 5 stars all round, isn't it?
Yeah, no, 5 stars for me, definitely.
Go on, feel free.
Tip I'll give you here is buy yourself some Ziploc bags, some little plastic bags with the cliffy tops. Your wallet and your camera, etc., will just fit into them nicely, and it just makes them dead safe. Something I always do, a couple of Ziploc bags are carrying me, and just things fit in there. And that's a prime example you need for that ride.
Definitely. And there is also a photo opportunity on that last drop as well. Disney used to employ somebody who used to look at the photos before they went up, because Splash Mountain was given the nickname. Does anybody know what the nickname was?
Flash Mountain.
Yeah, they used to have a lot of people who used to create photos that maybe you wouldn't want to see in a Disney park, and someone was employed to actually look at the photos and get rid of them just in case anybody did it. I don't know whether they still do that now.
It was a great job.
There's a website actually somewhere that's got all of these photos on it, but I'm not
for Hidden Mickey in the clouds at the end scene.
Ah, Hidden Mickey, yeah. It's above true, the, yes. Is it above the paddle steam? I think it is.
Just to the right, one of the best ones there is.
That is a great Hidden Mickey. Right, let's head a little bit further round the corner, which is over by Big Thunder Mountain. And as this is one of his favourite attractions, I think, Craig, you better start us off on this one.
Do you know what? I think you guys all know, I think everybody knows, this is my favourite ride in all of Walt Disney World. And I kind of re-fell in love with it going on the Paris one, which I think is even better. But I just love this. I love the story. I love the fact, you know, run around mine train that just gets faster and faster. I love the fact that it really is a family ride, because, you know, Kieran could go on it when he was 4. You know, it's not scary in any way. It's exhilarating. It's fun. It's fast. It's great, you know, during the day. It's even better at night time in the dark. It's even fun to go on in the rain, which I put on my blog post today. There is so much to enjoy about this ride. There's some Hidden Mickeys in there. I think that, you know, the staff members have cast members have great fun in operating this ride, and I just love it. I think the mountain's great. I think the scenery of it is great. So for me, I think it, you know, everyone's old enough to go on it should go on it. You know, even grandmas and grandpas should go on it. My dad comes on it, but, you know, my mother-in-law's been on it. 5, 6, 7 stars all round. I love it.
Juz?
Yeah, I think it's brilliant. It has a lot of memories for me, because it's just got a lap belt on it, and it's very sort of slippy seats. So I remember cushioning several of my kids. I'm not the smallest of chickens, and when you go around those things, it's very hard, but not to squash them to death. So it just has a lot of great memories for my kids, and I think it's absolutely awesome ride. I you know, concur exactly what Craig's saying. Brilliant.
So you're going 5 stars?
Oh, without shadow doubt.
Yeah, same with me. 5 stars. And Craig, I think you've hit upon a really good point, which is that this attraction is actually 2-in-1. Because if you ride it in the day, it's a completely different experience to riding it at night. And actually, you also get not a slightly different storyline, but you get more of a storyline in the evening. And the fact that when you pass through, past the sort of tavern, there's a party going on upstairs that you don't see during the day, but you do see in the evening with some of the, not animatronics, but at least the projections they've got going up there. Also a great place to watch Wishes. If you want a slightly different view, you can watch Wishes while you're on Thunder Mountain, because that still keeps going as well. Height restriction, again, 40 inches, 102 centimetres. There is Fast Pass available. If you must be able to transfer from a wheelchair and to ride if you do need disabled access is often. You can basically obtain a Fast Pass or speak to the attraction host for options. If there are no Fast Passes, you enter through the exit on the right-hand side. One tip that not everybody knows about is, when is the fastest time of day to ride?
Is it because it's got wood in it?
No. Not the wood.
Ooh, first thing in the morning?
No. Heat of the day.
Middle of the day.
Heat of the day. That's it, Josh, you got it. Oh, isn't it clever? Heat of the day. The tracks are well-oiled, well-greased to help it move round. And during the heat of the day, that wax, that oil, that grease begins to melt and makes the track slippier. And it adds, apparently, only a couple of miles an hour, but it adds a couple of miles an hour onto it to make it that little bit faster. So if you go heat of the day, admittedly, it's usually when the crowds are there as well. It's just that a little bit quicker than it is during the rest of the day. I give it 5 stars. I don't think I've given it yet, but it's just a fantastic attraction. Right, let's move on to Tom Sawyer Island. You're going to start us off, Jez?
just wish there was a quicker route to it. I like it. It's bizarre, you know. It's the kind of thing when you've been racing round and you want a bit of chill time. Nice to go across. There's not that many people normally there. A lot of people skip it because of the fact they've got to get the boat across, etc. I enjoy it. You know, the kids go and play a game of drafts, go into the fort, go squeezing down little time rock things where the father gets stuck and they all laugh at him. Yes, I have certain nightmares about that still. But no, thoroughly enjoyed it. Lovely place. It's a chill time. And this is what all families should do. Go down there for a bit of a chill time and you will find that there isn't that many people on there.
No, that is very, very true. That's one of the really good things about that. Craig, what's your opinion on Tom Sawyer?
I don't mind it. I wouldn't say it's something that I have to do every trip. Then we tend to do with the Magic Kingdom, there's always things we'll have to do. And then if we go back again, it'd be one of those I do on a kind of second trip during a holiday. I mean, it's never busy. I mean, that's one good thing about it. And there are some things to kind of do, but unfortunately, kind of where it's located, I've got two kids. One wants to go on Thunder Mountain, the other one wants to go on Splash Mountain, and that's kind of what they're heading for. So everything else really is a poor cousin in kind of Frontierland to those two. So I mean, it's all right, and it has got those paintbrushes that I mentioned before, actually.
Yes,
for the Swiss Alps. I was getting myself confused, so I do apologize to all the proper Disney people out there that know what they're talking about rather than me. so there is that little game that you can play if you're, I think, one of the first 5 people to find the hidden paintbrushes in Tom Sawyer Island. You can give those to a cast member and get a little prize.
Interesting to know what the prize is. I don't know. I've never found any. I've never known anybody.
Paintbrush.
That's fine. You just get a paintbrush. You get given a pot of paint. And see that fence over there?
Exactly.
I don't know what the prize is. If anybody has got a prize from Tom Sawyer Island, please let us know what it is you got, because it'd be interesting to hear what the prizes are. What are you giving it out of 5 stars?
Me? I'll give it two.
Just?
For family entertainment and chill time, I'm going to creep that up to 4.
Ooh,
as long as you're in the mood for it. That's what I'm saying. If you're in the mood for it, I would say this is a full start. I wouldn't say necessarily you've got to go and do it, but you've got the time to do it. And us Brits do tend to go across there for 14 days. And if you're all Disney for 14 days, because we can get those kind of tickets, why not? I think you'd enjoy it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go 3-star, but it's such a vast place to explore with all the caves and all the bits and pieces, and there's some really nice areas. You've got Fort Langhorne down the end, which allows you to shoot fake guns at the passing Liberty Bell. Not Liberty Bell, sorry, that's in Disneyland Paris, but the riverboat. And there's also... Mark Twain, that's the one, thank you very much. There's all just some... It's a bizarre, because it's this really quaint place in the middle of a really bustling, busy theme park. And it's also a little bit of a bizarre experience. I suppose, you know, it's open really to absolutely everybody. You know, you can take your little toddlers there and they can go and play on in the fort, and you can go for a nice wander around there. You can also try and scare people while I send them into the caves, which is quite entertaining as well. But there's one hidden little gem down there, and we'll talk a little bit more about this on the next Around the World in 80 segments. But that's Aunt Polly's Dockside Diner, which is a great little place to go and sit and have a relax. You've got the riverfront. You can take some fantastic photos of Haunted Mansion from there as well, which are great to sort of, you know, if you've got a really decent camera, really good zoom on there, you can get some really good photos from that. One thing we haven't mentioned is just how you get over to Tom Sawyer Island.
Swim.
That's one way of doing it.
on a raft.
On a raft, of which are free-floating. They're not on any sort of track whatsoever. And they're bizarre, because you sort of just get on this floating piece of wood, and there's about 50 of you on it, and you just trust this cast member to get to the other side without...
Oh, I see. You mean a raft. Sorry.
Raft.
What do you think?
I don't know what a raft is. I said a raft.
You don't know what a raft is?
Yeah. Well, I know what a raft is. Yeah, it's like a raft of fruit, isn't it? Yeah, whatever.
Sorry. Let's all sit down for Mr. Duncan's English lesson.
A country separated by a common language, isn't
exactly.
it?
Yeah.
Two countries separated by...
The North-South divide.
Are you lot taking the mickey out of me earlier on in the week? I don't know.
We don't take the mickey out of you, we're so kind. So you get on a raft to go over to Tom Sawyer Island. You do need to be ambulatory, that's another word for you. Is that right, Craig, or is it ambulatory where you come from? I don't know.
Ambulatory, definitely, yeah.
Because you need to be able to stand up on the raft, and there's a lot of steps when you get over to Tom Sawyer Island. But there's some just really nice touches. Obviously, it's based upon the story of Huck Finn, a story that Walt Disney was very, very close to... And it has Huck Finn, it has Tom's, all those bits and pieces from those sort of stories. And that's the reason it was sort of put there as almost a tribute to Walt Disney. So that's one of the attractions. Carry on.
Please, sir. I know it sounds stupid, and I don't know why they said, although part of it did. I would say families going down on the docks. I know why it's hot on the raft, but on the docks, it's a very hot area. Make sure the kids have got a little hat to cover their necks. I don't know what it is around there, but I've always found that the kids have picked up a lot of heat and take a lot of the water across with you.
Yes, very good point, because you can't drink the water that's around you. Right, the second attraction in Frontierland is that of the Frontierland Shooting Gallery. Oh, we've already got some interesting noises going on. Set in the 1850 Boot Hill of supposedly Arizona, which is a cost attraction. You don't get it for free. I think it's about $1 for 30 or so shots. And basically, there's over 100 different targets you can shoot at. It's nothing different to what you get in a lot of UK arcades. You get your rifle and you put your money in, and you just keep shooting, and it just does stuff as you shoot it. Is this something you guys are desperate to get to every time you go to Frontierland, or is it something you miss?
I'll go first before dust slates off. I really like this, actually, because I think my only gripe about it is you have to pay a buck to go on it. And I think, you know, you shouldn't really have to pay to do these things. When I remember doing this when it was, you know, you were firing proper kind of pellets, and you know, they spent mountains of time repainting it in the evening, and now it's kind of laser guns. It's not quite the same, but I do enjoy it. I wouldn't do it every time. I'd probably do it as frequently as Tom Sawyer Island, but you know, the kids now are at the age where they like doing it, and you know, I need to get them up with their firearms if they're going to grow up in a modern society, so it's good practice for them. So no, I do quite enjoy it.
Did you hear the Disney historian then getting his little bit of history in about how it used to be pellets and used to be painted?
I'm not just a pretty face, you know. I know a bit about this part. I'm not quite a geek like you, but you never know, one day.
One day. Right,
I've read a few books.
Right, at this point, I'm just going to sit back, get a coffee, and let Juz go. Go, Juz.
I'm curious about Mr. Historian's facts there. I know California was pellet-based, but I didn't know if Walt Disney World was ever pellet-based.
Yeah, Walt Disney World was pellet-based originally. The Buffalo Rifles are there now. Where
I'm just going to check now.
Okay, just check now.
I just get my new checks on Lou's site, and it says no.
Whatever. yes, they were pellet-based originally. I think it was about 1984. No,
I know it was quite recent, and then I realised it wasn't that recent. I'm just old.
Was it 1984? I have the date of 1984 in my head.
It was in the 80s, and I thought, God, it's not that long ago. And I thought, oh, it is.
Yeah, about 1984, it must have been.
When Space Invaders came out.
Space Invaders came out, yeah. and they did transfer them over, because as Craig quite rightly pointed out, they would have Imagineers or engineers or servicemen that every evening would have to go in and repaint many of the different items that you could shoot at, and it was costing them a small fortune in paint. I can't remember off the top of my head just how many litres. I know exactly one.
How many litres?
I don't know. Craig, get me a book out and have a look. I've got a copy in front of me.
That's
in
your there. Book, is it?
It's in my book. They
must be wrong then.
It must definitely be wrong.
No, I think I've got a copy of his book.
They would...
They're available on
Amazon.co.uk. Okay, look at it. He's been very good this evening, isn't he?
I've got it.
Have you got it?
It's page 59.
As I was saying, yeah, they would use litres and litres of paint every single evening, of which they would just spend a small fortune on. I suppose you're right then, in those days.
Personal Tour of the Magic Kingdom by Adam Goodgar.
This isn't an audiobook.
The Frontier Shooting Arcade, page 959. Do you want to read it? It's only one page.
Yeah, go on.
The arcade was an opening day attraction, but worked in a very different way to as it does now. Set on Boot Hill in 1850, that's 10 to 7, this shooting arcade gives the guests the opportunity to shoot at over 100 different targets, including a cemetery, bank, hotel, jail, tin cans, gravestones, and tree stumps. When the attraction first opened, the guests used to shoot real lead pellets at the target, but this was changed in the summer of
82. I was close.
The reason for the change was because the lead pellets would chip off paint off each of the targets. This meant the park maintenance would have to repaint the attraction every night after park closing. By the end of every year, the park would have used in excess of 2,000 gallons of paint. This, as well as the extra maintenance cost, meant it was very expensive traction to keep running. In 1982, the ride's real 54 caliber Hawking Buffalo rifles were refitted with lasers. That lasers were just laser scopes. The attraction would then work on laser beams to activate its 100 targets. The attraction, when it first opened, cost 25 cents for 35 pellets. The current cost for one play for about 20 shots is $1. Not bad rise for nearly 40 years! Exclamation mark. That's page 59 of the best book available on Amazon, Minnie Mouse, A Personal Tour of Magic Kingdom, which covers every single ride in great detail. Very good.
Oh, I do love you too. Right, okay. Moving on, if anybody makes any comments.
I didn't say anything. That's my thing, yeah.
Oh, sorry, go on.
I hate it because you have to pay. I don't think you should pay.
So after all of that?
That and the boat thing, you know, forget it. You know, you paid your attraction. Perhaps when there was pellets involved, there's nothing now. Just get rid of the cost and let people enjoy it. I think it's a rip-off of the payment. Let kids enjoy it.
It's good for anyone, but one quick note is that the guns are pretty heavy as well, so don't...
And it's quite high.
It is quite high.
Even with the stepping blocks, some my kids could hardly reach.
That's true.
Do you know the only thing that... The one difference I would say in the Paris one, there is actually two guns which are much lower down. They're kind of cut a little bit.
That's a very good point. They have,
and they haven't got that in Walt Disney World. So, Giles, can you make that change?
Yeah, they've got bigger boxes, haven't they? That's what they've got. And the guns are quite heavy.
Please know there's no fast pass for this attraction. What are you giving it?
Yeah, it's for the dollar.
What are you giving it out of five? Then go on.
Zero.
Oh, you mean it? No,
it's a rip-off because you've paid your money, it should be free.
I'm going for a three as well, because I'm not quite that mean.
How could you give three to Tom Sawyer Island and three to that attraction? I think you need to reconsider that.
No, put it this way, you have to pay for Coke and Disney don't pay for that. You have to pay for water and they get that for free.
I get water for free in Disney.
Yeah, okay, so do I. But I'm just saying, you know, I don't know why they try. I mean, maybe it'd be better if they gave you, you know, for the effect of it, they gave you a token and you put that in.
Yeah, so you got at least one free go. That'd be quite nice.
Yeah.
Right, let's head on to the shows then, to the very final, show ride attraction that we've got in Frontierland, which is the Country Bear Jamboree. Spin the wheel of chance, and we're going to go to Craig first.
Do you know what? I can't remember the last time I did this. I've done it a few times, but... you know that joke? Was it Tiki Room joke where they say, go and try the Hall of Presidents? They're probably going to say at the end, go and try the Country Bear Jamboree.
No!
I mean, it's all right. It just kind of reminds me of Fuzzy Bear playing a banjo. It's been a while since I've done it, so maybe I'll try it again when I go over in April. But it doesn't ring great memories in my mind, to be honest with you, apart from it's probably a cool place to sit down when it's hot.
That's nearly as blasphemous as your Jungle Cruise comments.
Yeah, Jungle Cruise is rubbish, so that's why.
Exactly. who's it for?
People that are hot. Okay. it's for everyone. It's a ride that's for everyone, or an attraction, not a ride. It's an attraction for everyone. I'll go again in April, and we can revisit this and see. I'll drag everyone in.
So currently, what are you giving it out of five?
Two.
Oh, harsh. Juz.
Can't believe you're getting some silly guns you're paying money for more than this. Do you know what? Yes, it is nice and cool. And to be honest with you, these days it is quite quiet as well, simply because it's tucked away a bit, I think. I enjoy it. Family, you know, it said who's it for? Babies, toddlers, probably tweens. Teens would rebel against it.
Yeah.
But for a family, all of you going. And I think even a teen being dragged in, it's an amusement. It, yes, in some ways, it reminds you a bit of the Muppets, and that's not a bad thing in a lot of ways. The movie was dreadful, but, you know, it's an enjoyment. It's animatronics at its best, and there's things going on everywhere. It's an enjoyable cooling off time. I'd give it, quite happy to give it 3 stars. I quite like it. Everyone should have a go at it.
Can I also point out that this was sort of an original concept from Walt Disney as well, one of the very few that you actually find in the park, due to the fact that it wasn't supposed to have been built in a theme park in the first place anyway. It was supposed to have been built in a ski resort. But I think it's a brilliant little show. It's changed over the years. There's been different variations of it that have come and gone. But we've still got the sort of original, I suppose, there, what with blood on the saddle done in a very humorous way and all of the different... It was almost a show that was ahead of its time in a way, with so many animatronics. And there are so many... I've seen a couple of attempts at it in the UK who have tried to do something very, very similar and done it very, very poorly. And it's one of those shows of which can teeter on the edge of it just being really bad. But I just think they've done such a fantastic job with it, and that it's still holding up after all these years, what with all of the characters' heads on the walls as well. And some great songs in there, and it's just sort of a rowdy, enjoyable 20 or so minutes, and I think it's fantastic. It's a great little show to go and see, and you're quite right, you know, it's a lot quieter now than it used to be. When you see people coming out of the theatre, it's very rare that I saw a lot of people coming out. It wasn't like it had been full, but and then that's, I suppose, why there is no fast pass for it at all. Stuttering there. You can go in both wheelchairs and EVCs, but be aware, one of the most important things is if you're thinking about saying, oh, well, let's go first thing in the morning, it does quite often open an hour later than the rest of the park. So if the park opens at 9, it'll open at 10. It's not usually part of the extra magic hours or anything like that. Craig, you gave it 2 stars, didn't you?
Yeah, did I, 2 or 3, 2.5. There you go, I'll go in the middle.
Juz, you gave it 3.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going for 3 as well. I just think it's just a nice attraction to go as a family and go and enjoy, especially if you've not seen it before. There you go. That's all of Frontierland. We're going to be looking at the shops and dining available, what is limited of it in Frontierland, on the next edition of the show. But there we go. We are on next segment down on the 80 segments around the world.
How many more to go? Are we there yet?
No, nowhere near there. We're nearly halfway around the Magic Kingdom at least.
Okay. Time for lunch.
Well, there you go. That is it for episode 37 of the Disney Brit Podcast. We thank you once again for joining us, and we thank again our sponsors, which is Attraction Tickets Direct and Complete Orlando. Find them at attractiontickets.co.uk and completeorlando.co.uk. Thanks again, as always, to Juz and Craig for joining me, as always, adding their insight and their wisdom. Now, if you want to email us questions, comments, suggestions, please email us podcast@disneybrit.com. We haven't had any for a while, so please do send us some emails over, say hello, a question, anything at all, just send an email to there. You can still ring our voicemail numbers, 0121. 288-2858 if you're in Europe and the UK, and 407-545-7980 if you're in the US. Again, not had any voicemails recently. It'd be really nice to hear from you and get some of those voicemails sent over, so please do that. Make sure to check out our website, www.disneybrit.com. You can find our shows online there. You can listen to them again. All sorts of bits and pieces that are going over there, as well as our forum that's attached to that, disneybrit.com/forum. We're getting more and more members every single day, so please come over and join in the conversations. Got all sorts of chats going on over there at the moment, including stuff to do with Mouse Meets and all sorts of bits and pieces. Check out our Facebook page, our Disney Brit fan page, and also friend up myself, Juz and Craig over there on Facebook. We are constantly on there, constantly talking to people who listen to the show about things that they want to talk about, or any questions they've got, or just ask tellers that they're enjoying the recent episode, which is always great to hear. Please continue to leave us a review on iTunes. We have had several reviews on iTunes over the past month, which have been fantastic, and we hope that more people are going to go on there. It really does help those people who are interested in listening to the show show, what sort of thing to expect. This is our YouTube channel. Nothing new added on there just yet. Hoping to get some more stuff up there soon. Go to Disney Brit Podcast. You'll find us over there on YouTube. You can still buy copies of the Minnie Mouse. You had an extract from it on this show in the UK and in the US, and as well as from places like Waterstones, Borders, WH Smiths. And please do check out our sister podcast at iOnOrlando, iOnOrlando.com. Find that also on iTunes. And don't forget to tune in to ESPN Radio, 1080 AM in Orlando. Go to espnflorida.com and listen to it online. We are going to be doing a show on there. We're going to be doing a section on there every single Saturday from 9:15 to 9:30 as part of the new Orlando show. And really, that's about it. So the only thing left for me to tell you is that the next show will be on Wednesday, the 31st of March. So until then, I'll see you.